Is Dexter ill? Today?
Mr. Kirk, Dexter's in school.
I'm afraid he's not, Miss Fishmore. Dexter's truancy problem is way out of hand. The Baltimore County School Board have decided to expel Dexter from the entire public school system.
Oh, Mr. Kirk, I'm as upset as you to learn Dexter's truancy. But surely expulsion is not the answer.
I'm afraid expulsion is the only answer. It's the opinion of the entire staff that Dexter is criminally insane.
Welcome to the Ian Edison Podcast. I'm your host, Pion.
And I'm the water bearer.
That's Nick Turnup. On today's show, we'll be discussing the SOPA Act and its variants worldwide. We'll also be looking at the ongoing feud between intelligence agencies and the LulzSec, anti-sec community. And we'll also have Beav from the 2600 community on with us as our guest host, and he'll also be talking about his latest project, Sagan. So welcome back to the show, Beav.
Hey, thank you. Cool.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. So, Dick, tell us about the water bearer.
Oh, she's awesome. She's a carbon-based molecular life form who is the second coming Messiah, Jesus Christ incarnate, with like loads of crazy, well, batshit crazy powers. She can do everything.
Yeah, she's brilliant. And she's modest, too.
Yeah, apparently she's going to rid the world of all sins and convert all the sinners into saints.
Yeah.
Well, with good communication skills.
For anybody who's slightly off the mark with this, I was on Twitter today. I was just interjecting. I've got this guy on there. He's an evolutionary biologist, and he was chatting to some girl, and I was just following the conversation because the replies that he was responding to, I was just basing on what he was actually replying to, saying, okay, this girl is going to be crazy. So I was checking out her profile, and I start interjecting in the conversations, and she starts talking about, ancient astronauts and, the remains of giants being found. And then I checked out her blog, and she turns out to be, like, literally she thinks she's the second coming. She's the Messiah. She's the water bearer. And she's dead. She's dead serious about it. So she's quite a character.
I wonder if her favourite song's I Am the Resurrection by Stone Roses.
So, yeah, interesting. It's been an interesting day on Twitter today. Oh, it's always an interesting day on Twitter. If you want to hit me up on Twitter, it's at Sean O'Brien. The spelling is on the website. You can figure it out. Dick Turnup is underscore Dick Turnup, is it, Dick?
Yeah.
And Beav, if someone wants to hit you up on Twitter, do you have a Twitter account?
It's the TheBeav. 666.
The Beav 666. Very, very satanic. I'm sure she loved that.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I should talk to her.
Right. So, there's been a recent intercept in the news as of late. There was a conference call. I'm sure you've all heard of this. A conference call between FBI, Scotland Yard, and some other law enforcement agencies. And they were discussing, anonymous LulzSec, anti-sec, and hacktivist attacks. And the details for the conference call were obtained by Anonymous, and they recorded the entire call, and subsequently it was posted to YouTube and a number of torrent platforms. So this has been posted across worldwide news. It's been interesting.
Yeah, it has been, and actually I think what's going to be interesting to find out how they obtained, for instance, that email that gave out the conference bridge number and whatnot, I think that's where the real story is going to get kind of interesting if they figure that out. I would suspect that it will probably be possible for the FBI to go through, based on the conference logs and see who's dialed in from where, and not necessarily get an idea of where they came from or who it was, but at least identify the person that's like, well, that's the guy that we know wasn't supposed to be here,
Right.
Not necessarily catch the person, but it's pretty much a very embarrassing thing for the FBI.
Sure. So the call was, the actual email was sent on Friday the 13th.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Back last month, Friday the 13th. And it was sent to a number of FBI agents, a number of other law enforcement agencies. So France, Netherlands, Ireland, UK, etc. So basically, the contents of the email have been posted on Pastebin, and all it stated was, a conference call is planned for next Tuesday. to discuss the ongoing investigations related to Anonymous, Lulzsec, Antisec, and their associated splinter groups. Associate splinter groups. It's like a bunch of terrorists, right?
Right.
The conference call was moved to Tuesday due to a U.S. holiday on Monday. So obviously accommodating the entire world here, just, you know. So then they posted the time, the bridge number, and then the access, like the PIN access code to the conference. So, I mean, obviously a very secure setup here they've got.
Right. And I'm thinking this is kind of one of those services where you can, you know, invite people to the conference bridge. So, you know, it could have been just something as simple as somebody's email getting intercepted at some point or whatnot. And then they just dialed into the bridge and silently recorded, you know. I'm not sure how many people were on this conference call, but it wouldn't be terribly surprising to me if somebody was able to basically just sneak into the conference. Like, they have the PIN information, they have the dial-up number, and then just record it, you know.
Right. And because it's being sent to a number of different law enforcement agencies, obviously not all of them are going to have the same sort of security protocols for their emails. Their servers might not be secured in the same way. So they might have, you know, hit some kind of obscure country's law enforcement agency and used that as a vector to get the emails. They could have having, you know, a packet sniffer on some system for months and just been waiting for it. Or someone could have even passing some hacker could have, well, I won't say hacker, cracker could have already had root on one of these systems and then just anonymously sent something on to Anonymous, which happens quite a lot. That Sony hack, for example, they were informed about that over, I think, Twitter or IRC, something like that. So there's people, you know, routinely informing them about these things, about these hacks, about where they have root, what they have root on, what routers they've compromised, all this. And, you know, that's probably how I can, how they may have obtained the email.
Well, it could have even been through, you know, somebody in any particular agency that was being emailed. One of their laptops could have even been compromised at that point. You know what I mean? Just enough to get the email. That's all it really takes. You know.
Yeah.
And then at that point, you have the bridge number and the access code to get onto the bridge, and that's really all you really need.
Right.
And I know from experience, whenever you have a lot of people getting on a different bridge, you know, or excuse me, a conference call. It's pretty easy to kind of like sneak in there, you know. You're expecting 20 people to show up on the conference call, not really going to notice if 21 show up and you happen to record it. So, you know, there's no telling. It's going to be an interesting story to see how it unfolds.
And if you just mute the handset, who's going to know unless they're actively monitoring numbers? Now, the better way to do this, obviously, for them would be to have some sort of access control list to only allow specific numbers to access the conference call. I'm not sure if that's possible from where they were sitting, but feasibly, if it was, that would be a better way to go about it, to only have specific numbers that can call in. But then I suppose you could spoof the number, so...
You could spoof the caller ID or in some cases even Annie. But I mean, at that point, it gets really kind of cumbersome to, you know, manage this kind of system if you're doing that.
Yeah, right.
You know, I think this was, you know, they weren't really foreseeing this kind of thing happen, so they weren't really that worried about it. And right. So just sending out the email, just like a normal invite, like you would get at your workplace, like, you know, to join XYZ conference call at this particular time. If anybody gets that email, whether they were intended to have that email or not, now has the bridge number and the access code. So, all bets are off.
One thing that I was that I sort of pondered to myself was it'll be interesting to see how this public leaking of the call might affect the cases of some of the suspects that were mentioned.
Right, yeah.
Because when I don't know how the legal system works in other countries, but when you go into court, the jury has to sort of have no prejudice against the defendant.
Sure.
Based on outside sources. So if there's been cases in the past that have been thrown out because the media's covered it and it could have already shaped the attitude of the jury towards the defendant. So it'd be interesting to see if there's sort of any ramifications on the legal proceedings due to this leak.
Right.
Well, definitely. I mean, here in America, you know, if some case came out of this, I think it would be very hard for anybody to use this conference call as, you know, for instance, like evidence or whatnot, because, and their standpoint, it's going to be illegally obtained material. And basically, you didn't have, you know, kind of permission to record this call in the first place. So I think it would be very difficult for anybody to, you know, use it in any kind of like legal hearings, except for the people who maybe made the recordings themselves. But what I'm saying is, like, people, you know, that might be affected, that would not go to court here. Like, those call, that recording of the call probably would not show up, I'm guessing.
Yeah, the sort of the point that I was making was, if the BBC start playing this record, they start playing this conversation, then it's going to get covered all over the UK at least. So in effect, it could influence a jury's decision before a decision's being made going into the case, because they will hear what the media wants to portray with this call, if that makes sense.
No, it makes complete sense. But my point is, actually, I don't think the recording would make it into, like, a particular trial. Like, let's say during the conference call. And actually, I haven't listened to it. Either of you guys listened to the whole thing yet?
Yeah, I've listened to it, yeah.
Okay. So I don't know what kind of information. I haven't listened to it yet, except for little clips off of the news. But my point is the, you know, even if it benefits, say, a client, like, say, the FBI and, you know, somebody else is talking about arresting somebody. Yeah. And they're talking about evidence that's going to be used or whatnot against the person or whatnot. Since the call was recorded illegally, I know here in the United States, you couldn't use that in your defense.
Yeah.
Right, you know what I mean? You couldn't say, well, I have a recording of these FBI agents. They'd say, well, that's actually a conversation that was never meant to be recorded. And it wouldn't, I believe, would probably never make it to court.
Right, right.
Right. That's... And also, it begs the question, if they had access, depending on how they obtained the email, they may have had access to this for quite some time and keeping low-key about it and recording a number of calls on conferences, which they perhaps haven't released yet. So, I mean, that's
actually
what's out there.
Well, I just heard on the news, actually, I guess a couple of hours ago, that they were claiming to actually do that.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but... I think you're right. I don't think that this was a per chance, oh, wow, we got on a bridge this one time and recorded a conference call. My guess, I mean, just my guess, would be that they've actually been doing this for a little while.
Right. And if they're circulating emails to a specific list of people, this list of people is a list of security experts in each of the various law enforcement agencies around the world. If
right.
they have access to this, and these are routine emails that are coming back and forth, so they probably do have access to these conferences because the pins are posted in the email, at least in this one email that they've posted on Pastebin.
Right, and I doubt that this would be the only call that they, you know, the attackers might have partaken in. I think this one was really, you know, from the anonymous LulzSec standpoint, was a really good one for them to release because it's kind of funny. I'd find it hard to believe that it was just a one-off kind of thing, like, oh, we just happened to gain access to this one phone call. I'm almost betting that they probably have more, and I think, and I could be wrong about this, but I think they said that they were going to release more information regarding other calls, but I could be wrong about that, but I think I'm correct.
I think yesterday up there was like 3 gigs of information uploaded to one of the torrent sites for, you know, part of the anonymous Fuck FBI Fridays.
Yeah.
So it's like 3 gigs of extra material put up there, but it is really like it's a kick in the teeth for law enforcement, who's, you know, they've already been shown up throughout the whole anti-sec and lulzsec era. I should well, era is probably not the right word, but it is definitely another kick in the teeth for the law enforcement agencies.
Oh, yeah.
Which is always a good thing, because you keep them on their toes.
So, yeah, they also have attacked the Boston police website also. I think they hacked that as well. So, yeah, I mean, they obviously have a good relationship between, you know, Anonymous and the various law enforcement agencies. So moving along, I know, Beave, over on your side of the pond, you had a recent bill from SOPA, the SOPA bill. But here in Ireland, we have similar legislation come in. The difference, however, here for the SOPA Ireland is that the legislation is being passed by our minister in a ministerial act, ministerial order, which means that there's no debate on it in the parliament. So it's just being passed. There's no vote on the actual on the bill. It's just going to be enacted as law. So obviously SOPA, which is the Stop Online Piracy Act, which was recently proposed in the US, what it does is that allows various media companies like record labels and so forth to ask an ISP, well, force an ISP to block access to specific websites if they are suspected of hosting pirated material. Now, the problem with this, obviously, is that something, for example, like YouTube, which could have, let's say, some guy could upload a, some copyright material, the entire website, rest of the website, which has legitimate material, could be affected. So that it didn't get passed, as I understand, in the US, but you had the opportunity to debate it in your right. parliament, in your houses. But we don't have that opportunity here in Ireland, so that's why there's such a big public outcry here. So we have I'm not actually involved in it, but there is a website called StopSOPAIreland.com, and they've got a petition up there, and information on how to get in contact with your local TD. To get this brought to a more, democratic platform where we can actually debate it and we can vote on whether we want to pass it as law or not. So far, the petition's got 80,000 signatures, which is pretty major considering there's only a few million people living in Ireland.
Right.
There's a number of acts like these being passed across the world or in the process of being passed. So you have SOPA in the US, you got the Irish variant of SOPA here, I'm sure the UK has got their variants, and then you've got ACTA, which is the Anti-Counterfeit Trades Act or something. There's so many abbreviations, I'm just getting mixed up at this point. But these are it's a global effort by, major record labels and movie companies to try stop pirated material going around, but they're going the complete wrong way about this. They're going to impact on legitimate websites just to stop individual acts.
Right, which is kind of ridiculous.
Absolutely.
Really. I find it kind of interesting. At least here, as you kind of pointed out, we could at least debate it. And then, after I think enough people yelled and screamed about it, the U.S. kind of just said, okay, fine, we won't. Okay, we get it. We'll shoot down that, SOPA and SOPA are done. But one thing that, has come out of it is people are, saying, watch out, they're going to try it again.
Right.
Just because we defeated SOPA and I think PIPA was also defeated as well.
Right.
They're just going to try to do it again. They'll try to do it this time, like maybe more under the radar. So keep your eyes open and,
Sure. And they might make some slight alterations to it and then just put it back into Parliament or into the Houses and get it passed that way. So they'll say, oh, no, this isn't the same bill. We've made changes to it. We've accommodated you, and now let's pass it. But obviously, the alterations might be so minor that they'll be completely irrelevant. So I think they need to scrap the bills altogether and come back at this from a whole approach. I mean, I understand movie companies and record labels trying to protect their property. But the way that they're coming at, the angle that they're coming back at this, it's not the right way to do it, because it's going to impact on a collective of people rather than impact on individuals who are, perpetrating and perpetuating piracy.
No, I agree. And actually what it gives is, for instance, the MPAA and whatnot, the ability to say that person is, as you kind of pointed out, is doing or publishing pirated material. Let's take that entire thing down.
Right.
Which can then turn around and affect 1,000 other people, right, you know, that have nothing to do with it and don't care about that. So it's kind of like, you know, the one bad apple spoils the whole bunch. Sure. You know, it shouldn't be that way.
I mean, that's last week. I don't know if you caught the show, B, but we had Phoenix on, and we were talking about the kid who wanted an extradite to America for linking to copyrighted material on the internet. He wasn't actually hosting anything. He was just like basically saying, this is where this is, go and have a look. And because he made some money out of Google adverts, that they want to try and extradite him.
Well, if I remember correctly, 2600, you know, the hacker Cordley, the magazine, they got in a bit of trouble for linking to code that would help decrypt DVDs.
Yeah, right. I remember that.
Actually, the code actually was not on their site, but they were linking to it. And there was a lawsuit that was followed up behind that, you know, and that's kind of, you know, it's fairly ridiculous.
Yeah.
And wasn't it, you know, yeah.
I mean, that's basically the internet, isn't it? It's how the internet works.
Based on hyperlinks. Yeah, exactly. That's the fundamental basis of the internet, is that you can link to another website, and that's how websites are internetworked together.
To be, you know, harassed for making a link to somebody, the code's not even on your site.
Sure.
And to make a link for, you know, to it, and then have, you know, a bunch of legal crap thrown at you, is total bullshit.
Yeah. So if you do link to pirated content, does that mean you're going to get like a professional name, like a piracy broker or something like that?
Well, I had an interesting thing. Me and a couple of friends were working on, there was these voiceover IP adapters called the PAP2, made by Linksys.
Okay.
Actually, we didn't really come up with the method that much, but we kind of simplified it a little bit. But it was about how to unlock them. And basically what you could do is you could buy them from Vonage, you know, the voiceover IP provider Vonage.
Yeah.
And you could unlock them, and then you could use them with any provider you so choose. And it also happened that Vonage, let's see, you had to buy each PAP2 for $50, but they gave you a $50 rebate.
Okay.
So they were like free VoIP adapters. And if you could unlock them, now I don't have to use them with Vonage. So we actually posted instructions and firmware about how to reflash your firmware. But it was on our site. And we got a contacted from Linksys, and they said, you know, we will throw you in jail if you don't, you know. And I said, okay, you're right. We'll get rid of that. We'll just link to this guy in Russia who has this. And then we got more emails saying, no, you got to take down the link. And I said, well, then you're going to have to go to Russia, because I'm just simply pointing to this guy in Russia who's doing this. We actually no longer host anything, you know, like as in firmware-wise, that, you know, would be considered, you know, piracy or whatnot.
Right. I mean, it shows how ridiculous the whole thing is. The guy that Dick was referring to, what he had was one of those, you know, one of those movie TV websites where they just link, the hyperlink to maybe a movie on YouTube or on Dailymotion or something like that. And they basically, they're trying to extradite him to the US because of that. So all he wasn't actually hosting any pirated material. He was linking to pirated material. So
right.
I think the reason, the real reason why they were pissed off at him about it is because he made money off the advertising of the website. But still at that's, He wasn't actually hosting any pirated material.
Well, why should he go to the US anyway? I mean, as we're also talking last week about where does the crime actually take place with regards to online crime.
Sure.
And if he's pointing to loads and loads of different content hosted in loads of different places geographically, why should he go to America?
Yeah, I think Phoenix brought up that point. Is the crime committed where the keyboard is based, or is the crime committed where the server is based?
My feeling is why should America be policing the internet when it's a total global infrastructure?
Yeah, I agree, and it should be completely decentralized and run completely in a decentralized manner by an independent body. It's the brilliance of the internet is that it's independent, and it encourages a free speech. And we've seen that. We've seen that in the riots in the Middle East, where they used social media like Twitter to get their word out, which wasn't being heard otherwise, because these states were they were dictatorships, and they weren't allowing the freedom of press and freedom of expression. So they got out in other ways through social media, and we need this. This is important for ensuring that democracy, and I don't mean democracy in a cliche sort of way, I mean democracy in its true sense, stays alive and well.
Yeah, we agree. Definitely, I agree as well. That's a brilliant point.
One point. I know I was just previously speaking about Soap Ireland. 2 points. An Anonymous attacked the Department of Justice and Department of Finance website, and they also, funnily enough, they I'm not sure how they got it. I'm assuming it was through SQL injection, but on one of the websites, they obtained usernames and passwords, and a number of the passwords for these accounts were simply password. So,
nice.
There you go. That's the security policies that Irish government websites enforce. Password.
It's also good to know that, 30 years of computer security, people still use the exact same crappy passwords that they always have. Yeah.
It doesn't matter how secure the system is, once the human element is involved.
Exactly.
You don't educate them, and you don't ensure that there's a strict security policy in there that will actually hold their hand. They'll say, okay, you've got to have, a password of certain complexity, of a certain length, must be changed every X amount of weeks or days or whatever the policy needs to be. If you don't have these policies, that people are just inherently lazy. They won't pick a hard password because they want something that's easy to remember, because it just makes their day less tedious.
I thought it was because they were using the Richard Stallman approach, which was to all have the same passwords, in effect not have a password and have everything be free and happy and covered in marshmallows.
Right. Beav, you've been working on a new project as of late. Actually, you've been working on it quite a while, called Sagan. Tell us, what is Sagan?
So Sagan is a log analysis engine. What we found is, in the open source community, there's a few log analysis engines, but a lot of people tend to favor very commercial kind of products, which is fine. But every commercial product, they have their own secret sauce, and it'll just save you from everything at all times. So what we decided to do was release a log analysis engine that would, that is open source, that people can use and actually, benefit from and not have to pay tons of money for.
Okay. What sort of interoperability do you have with this? What sort of other systems does Sagan work alongside with?
Oh, well, Sagan uses a very Snort-like rule set, Snort being a IDS engine. Sure. And its rule set has been fairly open, and actually a lot of even like commercial IDS engines will adopt or can pull in Snort feeds. So we decided that what we would do, rather than writing our own custom kind of rule set, we would kind of adopt the way that Snort writes rule sets. And that gave us an advantage in that, for instance, if you want to do rule updates, you already have the tools. That is, if you already use Snort, or even if you don't use Snort, but if you already use Snort, the tools are already out there to go ahead and update rule sets and do things of that nature. So we didn't have to write a whole new system for updating rules. We could just simply piggyback on top of SourceFire Snort.
Sure.
And then another thing that we also decided to do is, one thing that I really hate are security systems that where you have to look at 20 different consoles.
Right.
For instance, you have your IDS console, then you have your log analysis console, then you have your, detection of wireless network console, whatever, it doesn't matter. So one of the things that we decided to do was basically use Snort back in, like the same database that Snort plugs in its IDS information, the packet dumps, the source IP addresses, stuff like that, and basically use that as our back end. So It stores into the same type of database that Snort stores into for packet analysis. We actually store log analysis into.
Right.
And then at that point, we don't have to worry about things like front ends. And the reason I say that is, like, Snort has a lot of fairly neat front ends to it. That is, ways to go through and data mine material out of that database. Like, you know, who attacked me at when, and, you know, what was the packet dump and whatnot. So we can kind of put that side by side. And that makes us able to correlate data as well, not only from a packet level, but from a log level as well.
So what type of logs I mean, is it adaptable to any log based on the rule set, or what sort of logs would you use data with?
Yeah, I should explain. The rule set, I mean, so basically what we're looking at here is we're looking at syslog traffic in most cases. Okay. So whether it be a Cisco router or it be a Windows environment or Linux boxes or whatnot, you have a certain rule base, just like Snort does, that you can go through and enable and disable rule sets. So for instance, if, you know, I run a, you know, POP3 server and that, you know, and I run POP3, but I don't use IMAP, let's just say. Well, there's no reason for me to enable the IMAP rule set,
right?
Because that's just going to waste cycles, CPU cycles, and log analysis. So we can enable, like, granularly enable what we want to for each environment that we go into. So, for instance, like, okay, they have Windows. Okay, check mark. Put that one in there. Put in Cisco routers, but leave out, you know, Fortinet route or Fortinet firewalls, because they don't have any here. So you can kind of like make it more fine grained is the kind of the idea.
Right. And how long have you been working on the actual Sagan project itself? When did it start, and what brought you to the point where you said this is something that I should code?
Oh, actually, I started it in late 2009, I guess, maybe early 2010. What had happened is we were on site. This was for a credit card transaction company, and they had a feeling that their network had been compromised. So they had called us to come in and kind of, you know, try to figure out if that was the case. And one thing that we noticed the guy was doing, he was modifying logs. Like, they had a centralized logging server. So basically, think of it this way. You have 100 different servers. They all send logs back to a centralized point, which is great. But they were doing it in kind of like a very silly way. And that is, they were using what they call offsets. So every 5 minutes, it would send the last 5 minutes of logs.
Right.
You kind of see what I'm saying? And what the attacker was doing, and I'm not 100% clear if he was doing it on purpose or just by chance, he would get on and modify the logs before they were sent to the centralized server.
Right.
So if the administrator looked at it, that login, his login to steal information, never happened. And our thing was like, wow, this should always be done in real time.
Right.
And this should be something that, you know, is detectable in real time. And that's pretty much where the idea came from, was to write like a very real time, lightweight, fast system that could go through logs. And when I talk about, you know, I'm talking about, you know, 3,000, 5,000 log lines a second.
Right.
So, you know, one log might be, one log line might be, you know, this guy entered his password incorrectly. The next log line might be, this Cisco router has a PSU fan failure, you know, but you're getting those at 5,000 log lines a second, and be able to like parse through those in real time and give you the information that you need. And that's pretty much where it came from.
Okay. Dick, have you had a chance to download Sagan yet?
No, I haven't, because I was stuck in the snow earlier, but I'm going to have a look at it tonight and have a little play around with it. What I was reading about it was it's Sagan's multi-threaded, so it helps to prevent I/O blocking. Now, right. As I understand this, is this so that while it's writing a log event, it can keep receiving log events?
You got it. Because one of the big problems is that when you're trying to process this data in real time, one problem is you can't stop that processing to write to an SQL database. Because if you do that, and if you're receiving 5,000 log lines a second or more, the time that it takes you to write to an SQL database, even though it just seems like a few milliseconds to the, you know, average person, you might be missing events that are going by. So the reason that Sagan's multi-threaded is that it'll actually go through and keep receiving it. And whenever a rule gets triggered or something gets triggered that it thinks is bad, it'll actually turn around and spawn off a thread that says, go log this to the database and just do it. You know, basically, I have things to do. I have to keep monitoring logs. It separates itself from the logging process. And that's the reason it was threaded that way, because we wanted to keep this as real time as possible. And even though an SQL insert or something like that seems like it would be a minuscule amount of time, when you're dealing with thousands of log lines a second, it becomes, you know, that little bit of time is crucial, because you can miss data within that little short time scope.
Right. So obviously, you know, once a new thread is required, it's created on the fly, and it just helps the overall efficiency of the actual application.
Right. Right. I mean, it makes it more efficient. I mean, the main engine can keep processing logs. If it has to send you an email about a bad event, log it to a database, write to a unified to output format, that is all separated from the main engine, and that's the reason why.
What sort of platforms are supported? Is it like a single OS platform or what?
No, I mean, it's, you know, we've had it under OS X, Linux, OpenBSD, FreeBSD, and whatnot, and it's completely open source, so you can, you know, pull down this code. And we've had a lot of people kind of, you know, use it, and I've actually received some good emails about people that are currently using it. Okay. One key thing that I should point out that we're also doing is what we call a log normalization. That is, there's a little bit of a trickiness that you have to do with logs to get where the attacker is really coming from, and, you know, like to get valid information. Like, for instance, you know, let me see if I can explain this. So let's say you SSH into a server, right?
Right.
And the log that's generated is actually from the server, and then the destination is to the centralized logging. That doesn't do us any good.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So what we do is we pull apart the log message, and we actually go, well, wait a minute. The SSH session actually came from this remote host. Let's make that the source. And the destination is the machine that's being SSH'd into.
Sure.
So it flips everything around. Right. So we do a lot of things like normalization as well. Because, you know, you don't have to like search through a million lines of logs to and look at their content to figure out where the SSH session was coming from. That should be apparent by the software itself.
Yeah. So it's obviously a more accurate system.
Well, yeah. I mean, but that's like one thing that we're always working on is make it more accurate. I mean, there are some logs that you get and they're annoying. They'll say, I just got attacked.
Yeah.
But that's all they say.
Like, you don't know by
crap, who. Crap, they didn't give me the source IP. What the hell is going on? And in those kind of situations, all we can do is, you know, work with the vendor and say, your logging is crap. You want to like give us a clue, you know, as to, you know, what was happening, so that maybe we can extract it and give it back to the end user as something useful for a change. So and another thing that we've been doing as well, are you guys, have you played with Snort very much?
Yeah, I've played a bit with Snort.
Okay. Are you familiar with Snort Sam?
Yeah.
Okay. Slightly. Okay. So Snort Sam, just to kind of like a whatever. What Snort Sam allows Snort to do is if a rule gets triggered and it has a certain flag in it, it allows Snort to communicate with perimeter devices. Like, for instance, it can talk to a Snort Sam server, which in turn talks to a Cisco router and can stop the attack.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
So it provides a response to an action.
Right, exactly. So, you know, if you have a rule set that you... One thing I should point out that you don't get very many false positives on. You're pretty clear that this is a bad thing that's happening.
Yeah.
You can have that rule turn around and say, let my perimeter know and block this kind of attack.
Okay.
So we actually, last week, I incorporated the code into Sagan to do the exact same thing. So what Sagan can do is, based on log information, if it thinks like, and the rule is set up properly, it can actually go through and say, wow, this is really freaking bad. Right. What I'm going to do is send off a message to my perimeter saying block it network wide.
Right.
And so, right. So that's like a new thing that we've just added in.
Yeah, it's and that's one of the key problems where you have information, you've got logs based on, okay, here's an attack, here's what's happened, but it's not performing any action on them, so this attacker is allowed to continue their attack. When what you should be doing is saying, okay, here I've identified this attack vector. I know this is probably not some sort of false alert.
False positive, yeah.
Let's act on this, and let's either block the IP address or block the type of traffic or block this port or whatever the appropriate action is. So it is interesting. I should probably download SnortSam. I was familiar with it, but I haven't toyed with it. Just toyed with my Cisco router and just take it from there, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. I mean, it can, Sagan and Snort are kind of like distant cousins. We definitely based a lot of, for instance, like the rule sets and things like, integrating SnortSam into it. Because one thing that we noticed, their log utilities like fail to ban. Are you familiar with that?
No, I haven't used fail to ban.
Okay, so what fail to ban does is if it sees a brute force attack, somebody SSHing into a server and keeps repeatedly trying usernames and passwords, it'll, on the local machine, firewall off that IP address.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Locally, that works very well. But our idea was to use SnortSam so that I could actually say, if I see that SSH attack, brute force, whatever.
Right.
It could be any rule, but just brute force in just this case, I can actually tell my perimeter gear, my firewalls, block right. it, and it'll block it network wide, not just the host, but network wide as well.
Right.
So that's been right.
You could have someone, let's say, run a dictionary attack against the SSH server, and then you tell your gateway, which might be running IP chains, to say drop packets after three incorrect attempts or whatever. Yeah.
Well, actually, remember, Sagan would be the one that decides. So he would get it and say, okay, there's been 5 invalid attempts here within the last X number of minutes. Now go tell the perimeter.
Yeah, okay, I get you. Yeah.
And so then, as you pointed out, it could be like IP tables, it could be Cisco PIX, ASA, whatever.
So the decision making is obviously all decided from Sagan rather than from the perimeter.
Right, which lets you, and that's one thing you have to watch out whenever you deal with these kind of things, is that you don't obviously want false positives.
Right. That was the next topic I was going to discuss. Is
right. So you got to be very careful about which rules. And this is something very new that we just, as I said, like a week ago, that we just added in. We're still trying to get kind of grips with it and find out what are the best rules to automatically enable that we can push out to, the people that use Sagan. Because we don't want to push out rules that, might create false positives and screw up their network. So you have to be kind of careful about it.
Obviously, there's certain things that you could legitimately identify as not being a false positive, like someone entering in a login 167 times. That's
correct.
That's not a legitimate login. That's obviously an attack. But then there's other attacks where you it's 50-50.
No, it is. But actually, one thing I would say, if you look at it from an IDS level and a log level, logs are fairly static. So your false positive rate isn't usually nearly as high as it is with like IDS. IDS, you're having to actually go into the packet and you're using, several different tricks to try to identify things. Logs are pretty static.
Right.
So identifying things, it's easier to write rules that create a lot less false positives. Because a Cisco, ASA typically always logs like every other Cisco ASA.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Sure. So you don't have as many, but they do come up. But yeah, and that's stuff that you have to be careful about.
Okay.
So how kind of scalable is Sagan in I suppose in relation to network size? Is it just as effective on small networks as it is on really big ones?
Oh yeah, I mean, well, the way that we kind of wrote it is, as I said, we wanted to be as lightweight as possible. So, for instance, whenever I run it on, my laptop, it takes maybe 10 to 20 meg of RAM with rules loaded. Not a whole lot. So you could, in theory, like run it on your laptop and have like a little pop-up when somebody, you know, SSHs into your machine or tries to SSH into your machine, you know, 20 times. And they have like a little nice little pop-up, you know, generated by, you know, Notify. But we're actually, I mean, that's actually not what we're trying to necessarily go for. It just happens to be that one of the things that is so lightweight that we can do that. But the network-wide, you can, you know, if we're getting, for instance, several thousand, you know, log lines a second, and in some places we're getting 3 to 4 or 5 thousand log lines a second, mm-hmm. it's able to scale to it. I mean, in that, you know, as long as you have a beefy machine that's able to keep up with the information that's coming in, then it can keep up with it. If it can't, then you can actually split it up into several different machines, you know, and pass off, like, you know, between three different, you know, servers, the log information, have Sagan look at, like, one Sagan instance look at Windows events, and another Sagan instance look at Cisco events, another Sagan, you can, you know, migrate the load is basically what I'm saying.
Right. What sort of license is it released under?
It's a GPL version 2, so, I mean, it's completely open source, so anybody that wants to use it or whatnot, we don't have really kind of any restrictions, even just for, you know, just playing with or whatnot, that's right. Fine with us. And okay. Same thing with the rule sets. We don't, at this point, we're, you know, still, same thing with the rule sets, you know, that we develop in-house, because we get to play with like a lot of different equipment, every, you know, just a lot of different gear. So we get to write a lot of rule sets that may or may not directly benefit somebody. But, you know, it is kind of nice whenever you get an email and says, wow, I do have an RS6000, you know, running AIX. Right. And I was interested in the log. Oh, well, we ran into that, too. That's why we wrote these rule sets for it, you know.
Right. And I also noticed on the website that if anyone wants to submit their own custom rule set, they can do that on there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, of course, the only thing is, like, we have to go through and, you know, kind of critique the rule set.
Right.
You know, there's a methodology about, well, just like with Snort.
Yeah, sure.
There's a methodology about how to write rule sets. But well, we've gotten, like, for instance, Juniper Gear. We've had people submit rule sets for that. And we don't have, like, direct access to that, so, you know, to a lot of Juniper Gear. So what we'll do is take that rule set, try to see what they're kind of doing, and then try to go through documentation to verify that it looks like, you know, yeah, that would be a good way to do this, or let's add this in here, because there's ways you can trip out or trick out the rule set so they'll be more efficient, create less false positives, and just be better for the system.
Right. And so if anyone wants to get a hold of Sagan, what sort of mediums are available for them to download it or install it?
Well, right now, I know that in Ubuntu you can do an apt-get for Sagan, and in Gentoo, you can do an emerge. Right. However, one thing, I mean, this is, you know, it's still, in my opinion, fairly new software. Mm. So if you want to build it from source, I would say go to the Sagan website, which is sagan.quadrantsec.com, and that's quadrantsec.com.
Okay.
And if you go there, there's a link there that talks about how to get, like, kind of like the bleeding edge source code, which is basically through Git, or there's kind of like the stable releases and whatnot. But, you know, in my opinion, it's a fairly new project, so, you know, we're always adding new things. I always tell people to go to Git because it's more fun, but, you know.
Sure. Excellent. We'll obviously add the links to the show notes as well.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Dick?
Yeah, that's something that I'll probably be in the Telefreak channel later, Beav, pestering you, trying to get it to run.
No, that's fine. Actually, I mean, you'll notice whenever you're installing it, it's a lot like installing Snort. Like, the rule sets are the same, the configuration file. And again, we're kind of trying to piggyback on, I have a big thing about not reinventing the wheel if the wheel already works, you know. So you'll notice with the configuration file and the rule sets, you might get confused. Am I in Snort rules? Oh, wait. No, I'm in Sagan. It's meant to be that way.
Okay.
So that we don't have to worry about, you know, back end and stuff like that. Basically, our job is to figure out how to do the best log analysis.
Right. Excellent. Excellent. So, I mean, that's it's definitely something I'm going to check out. I'll install Sagan tomorrow, and I'll just have a tie around with it. And I suppose next week on our next show, we can give some feedback after time with it and take it from there. But okay. it certainly looks like an interesting project, and I implore everyone who's listening to the show to just check it out, download it, and it's open source, so feedback is welcome, alterations
exactly.
are welcome, and send back any feedback that you have to Beave.
Oh yeah, and that's one of the great things about it too is, you know, I do get feedback. Like, what, you know, what's really great is when you get a patch that fixes a bug for something you didn't even know was a bug.
Then sure,
you
right.
go, holy crap, that is a bug. Thank yeah. you so much. That's Excellent. Something I didn't know about.
So yeah, I'll add all the links to the show the show notes on the website. So just moving along to our last topic, Dick Turnup has been toying around with the Arduino set. You recently got a set, Dick. How are you getting on with that?
Yeah, I recently decided to get into the old hardware hacking. To be honest, it's went pretty good. I've got a couple of projects that I want to work on. Basically, for ages, I'm rubbish at reading instructions. I like to just sort of use the hands-on imperative and get my hands dirty and refer to the instructions when I'm tearing my hair out. So I went and bought a little liquid crystal display.
Sure.
And I thought, well, what can I do with the liquid crystal display? I know, I'll get the display. Dick Turnip.
Yeah.
inetizen.org. So yeah. I started working on it, and then I downloaded the data sheet, and then I realised that I'd never actually read a data sheet before in my life. So yeah. I had to kind of sit and decipher how to use this data sheet. But after a lot of head scratching and putting wires in the wrong place, I actually blew an LED up because I thought...
Nice, congrats.
I thought, what'll happen if I stick this one in here? And it just went bang and just popped. Because I just stick things in holes.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing. I mean, if you're not breaking it, you're not doing it right. I mean, that's part of learning.
That's it, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. So basically, after a lot of head scratching, I got it to display the message. And I haven't really done anything since because I've been so busy with other stuff. But my project that I'm going to work on now is I'm going to write a JSON parser in Python, which is basically pass my Twitter feed,
right.
and then use the Arduino to connect to this script, which I'll probably just, you know, like whack up on the internet. Use the Arduino to connect to the script, which will have already passed the Twitter feeds, and it'll probably just send it in plain text to the Arduino, and it'll be sort of like a Twitter pager. It won't be the most secure thing ever, but that's my plan for now.
Excellent. Sounds good. So I've been meaning to get an Arduino set for quite some time, but I'm just lazy. That's all I can say. About it. So I'm just lazy, but I will get one. And I did say to Dick Turnup a few weeks back that if he manages to get his Arduino set to say inetizen.org, I'll throw in a free inetizen goodie pack for him. So that's all it's really to Dick Turnup, theoretically.
Yeah, you owe me a non-existent inetizen goodie bag, and I want
which doesn't exist. We don't have it, exactly.
What I will say is, I'll kind of have to admit this, I've got a spare LCD screen, because when I was trying to get it to display, I was just getting these big black blocks across the top, so I thought, black box it, I've got to get myself another LCD display.
Excellent.
It's about to have a different sort of pin setup. So I bought another LCD display, and I looked at it and I thought, it's the same display that I've already got. So then I had two displays, which were just exactly the same. So I got it working in the end. But it's pretty addictive, though. I think it's the fact of like using tools. Like I went and got myself a soldering iron.
Yeah.
And all the, you know, like all the little wire snippers and everything. And I'm sitting there and putting all the bits together, and I'm thinking, what else can I buy? I need to buy more things. I need to do more things. So then I'm going into electronic shops with all these guys with, you know, like big, huge Linux beards. And they stand there shopping. And I'm saying, I'm after a potentiometer. And they're like, what kind of potentiometer do you require? And I'm like, I don't know. Tell me.
Great.
No, good stuff, man.
I just want to say that I've been inspired by Beef tonight, so I've been meaning to get coding on this for a while, but I'm going to start coding. It's just going to be a HTTP log analysis application, because I've got quite a relatively good understanding of how web attacks work, SQL injection, cross-site script. Mm-hmm. I want to write something specifically for analyzing HTTP logs, this access logs for Apache and so forth. So I'm going to start coding on that tomorrow, and hopefully the next week I'll have some sort of basic setup for it, and we'll take it from there. It's just,
yeah, but you're looking at access logs, you said?
Yeah, well, just specifically for HTTP, just to for identifying just specific web attacks where I can...
But here's actually one point I was going to bring up, is actually, you know that... with Apache and whatnot, you can dump your logs to syslog.
Right, yeah.
Which means that you can, if you'll look under the SIGINT rule set, we actually have an Apache rule set.
Okay.
So what I'm begging you to do is just write better rules for us.
Okay, there's the challenge there.
Because okay. you can use PCRE, you can use content. There's like a bunch of different ways to do it. So before you go out like writing a bunch of code, well, write really good code and then submit it to SIGINT.
Okay, well, leave it with me. And that's my challenge. I'll bug you on IRC about the protocol.
You can bug me anytime. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Also, one last thing I'd like to say. We ran the first ever computer security event convention here in Waterford. A few weeks, 21st of January, and I'd like to firstly just say thanks to all the talkers who came to the event. It was a really good event. It was our first event, and all things considering, it went off great. I'd like to thank all the guys who made the trip all the way over from England to the event. Clappy Monkey, Mike Kemp, for giving a talk, and we'll have him actually on the show hopefully this coming Monday. He gave a brilliant talk on "When I Grew Up, I Want to Be a Cyber Terrorist," and anyone who ever gets the opportunity to hear any of these talks, check him out. He's a funny guy. Also, I coded a Capture the Flag event for the competition. I ran two servers, one on OpenSolaris, one on Ubuntu, which both had two custom-coded web applications and a custom-coded server. And there's a lot of role-playing involved. So unlike a lot of Capture the Flag events, which are straightforward, you know, hack this game, route this, do that, what I did was I created a sort of storyline for people to go through. Like, they had to intercept emails, they had to attack a website to gain information, and it was a story the whole way through. So the winning team was at Club Mate, which was a mesh of the guys from the Togue hackerspace in Dublin and Dublin Institute of Technology, and also free public Wi-Fi. Also completed the full event with 15 points. And that was a similar set of guys. And then the WIT Hacking Society, they received 10 points, and Coupe de Gras, which is the Feed Henry team, they got 5 points. So the event was good. I put the walkthrough up, a slight walkthrough up on the CampusCon website. The code is still on the server, so I'm sure I'll get it up at some point. But I'd like to thank everyone for coming and taking part in it.
From the conference, is there any... I don't know, audio, video, or links to presentations?
Well, the presentations are up online. I gave a presentation on SQL injection. I discussed union attacks, error-based attacks, and then blind SQL injection. So my slides are up on the website. Not all the slides are up. The talks, we got recordings of some of the talks, but it was a last-minute decision to get recording because we couldn't get a video camera in time, so we only got portions of the talks, but the slides are available. One of the talks we couldn't give put up any slides for because it was from one of the guys from HENET, which is it's basically the backbone infrastructure infrastructure for Ireland, and so they couldn't make it publicly available beyond the scope of the CampusCon convention. But anyone who's interested in SQL injection, my slides are up there, they're available. And also check out Keane Clark's slides from Feed Henry. They do some real cutting-edge mobile development stuff. It's worth checking that out. So all the talks are up there that we have in regards to slides. And we're looking to do an event, this time a national event, probably based in Dublin between the Irish 2600 community before the end of the year to get an even larger convention. So we might even get you over for that, Beav. I'll let you know as time gets... progresses. We weren't quite sure how big CampusCon was going to be, so I didn't want to get someone traveling all the way over from the US and then coming over and it wasn't that good. But we had about...
If I can get any excuse to come over there, I would do it.
Yeah, sure. We had about 70.
No, I would. It doesn't matter how big or small it is.
Right.
It would just be fun.
But it was a relatively good event. I brought down my new Commodore 64. I had that set up for people to toy around with. We had a games rig set up after the event. We had the event was moved at the last minute from the actual lecture. Lecture facility to a sports hall, but mm-hmm. we may do with what we could do. The campus bar was right next door to the event, so everyone fell out of the event and into the campus bar. We had a full screen, like a projector screen, set up with a SNES emulator. So we had some Killer Instinct and Street Fighter, some food and beers, and then we went into town for some more beers.
Nice.
As you do. What else would you do in Ireland? So, no, it was a good event, and I'm really happy. Thanks to everyone who came to the event, and thanks to everyone who gave talks. By the end of the year, as soon as I have further information, I'll post it, but we will be having an event by the end of the year in Ireland, and Beav, I'm sure, we'll get you over. And we'll get Dick Turnip over. He was too ill to make it this time, but we'll get him over by the end of the year.
And yeah. I'd love to. That'd be awesome. Actually, I have a question for you guys. Are you guys going to be able to make Hope this year?
I hope so.
I won't, unfortunately, due to health problems. I can't really travel too far from
okay.
I do hope to make Pope at some point, but it probably won't be this year. Quite possibly next year.
Okay.
I'm hoping to make it over. All things going well in my application. Well, my travel clearance form clears with the girlfriend. then hopefully I'll be able to make it over. And that's if America will let me in the country as well. But one thing I will do is, before I go through the TSA scanner, I'll make sure I get a semi first, so they think I'm really well hung. if I could just spam my new blog for a second, which is http://blackbestblog.inetizen.org, and that's my little corner of the internet where I'm going to be talking all kinds of gibberish, yeah, all kinds of shite the way Dick Turnip does.
And the link for it is on the inetizen.org website as well. And Beav, is there any websites you want to plug?
Just the Sagan website, which I think I already did. That's Sagan.quadrantsec.com.
And we'll stick that on the website. And also, anyone who's not familiar with Beav's other projects, Telefreak and the Dead Rope and VMS Cluster, they're also yes. linked to the website. Check those out. So that's us from now. Thanks, Beav, for coming on and being our special guest co-host tonight. And thanks, Dick Turnip, for being sober.
You're very welcome.
Hey, thank you, guys.
I've been sober for 4 months now.
Well, thank you.
Where's my goodie bag, man? I'm doing everything right.
It's on.
You are.
Our next podcast will be hopefully with Mike Kemp this Monday. So until then, that's everything. Bye for now.
All right. Thank you, guys. And keep up the good work. Awesome podcast.
Brilliant. Appreciate it, Beav. And you're welcome on anytime.
Love you.
Just always, at the end of every podcast, he always has to, there's always something just completely inappropriate.
No, there's not the answer.
I'm afraid exposure is the only answer. It's the opinion of the entire staff that Dexter is criminally insane. Same.